every lawyer has three closing arguments. There's the one that he prepares before he gives the closing argument, the one he gives at the trial, and the one he gives lying awake at night after the trial is over. And I'm sure that this will be the case with what I'm going to say. I have revised these remarks many times and have thought of all kinds of eloquent and clever things to say, most of which I will probably forget. At least this time, I did not have the experience I had the last time I heard the rabbi speak in New York, in which he gave a paper immediately before mine, and it was practically word for word what I had to say. And I don't know if through some Kabbalistic way he extracted my, some magical African way he extracted my speech, but it was very disconcerting. And at least this time I had the chance to hear him last night and revise the speech. And only this time I'd have to say that Father Turchelli was the thief, and apparently my Calvinist ancestors would certainly have suspected the Church of Rome as being capable of all kinds of black arts, but this time Father Turchelli was the culprit who stole my speech. This organization, if it is an organization, this newsletter and this conference is aptly named the American Renaissance. The Renaissance has been described as the rebellion of the facts against the theories and the victory of a spirit of criticism over a spirit of acceptance. And I think that's what characterizes American Renaissance and all of us in this room. We come from very different backgrounds. We come from backgrounds where I'm sure there are many things that make it difficult for us to work together, but we will have to work together if there's to be any salvation for Western European civilization and the race that created that civilization on this continent. But one feature that I think characterizes and sets apart the people who are in this room from others is the following. And I was asked one time by somebody, what do you think characterizes people in our movement? What sets them apart from other people? And I thought about it, and after thinking, I replied, I believe that they have perhaps a genetically inborn ability to see the truth and to observe reality and not to believe nonsense that is told them by authority figures. Now, that's gratifying to our egos, but it's also backed up, I think, by scientific evidence. I am told by a psychiatrist that I represent that studies have been done where people have been gathered in a seminar like this, and two men will walk in, let's say a blonde and a brunette, and the blonde jumps the brunette and obviously in front of the whole crowd initiates a fight in which the brunette is the victim. The police then run in and grab the brunette, the victim, and they grab him, and in front of the people in the audience, the police, the authority figures, the men with the badge, grab them and they say, "We've got you at last." And they drag him out, showing every indication of righteous indignation at this person who was actually the victim. And then they come back into the room and say, this guy is a criminal. He has a long record of petty assaults and troublemaking. And as you will recall, he jumped this poor fellow here, who of course was the actual aggressor, and stole his briefcase. And this psychiatrist tells me that in that situation, a majority of the people, average people, will agree with the police that yes, you know, the victim was the criminal, and they will give testimony, and they will, a surprising percentage will even describe the briefcase when neither of them was carrying a briefcase. So there's a great deal of evidence that there is a spirit of acceptance in many people who will accept what they're told by an authority figure, be it a newspaper editor, their priest, or some other person that they believe. They will come to accept that. And I think that's what's happened here in our country in the last few generations. I don't have the learning of many of the speakers, especially our first speaker, whose speech I thought was especially good on the subject of racial differences. I don't have a scientific background. I'm a lawyer. But to me, the whole idea of racial equality was preposterous from childhood. Maybe that was because my family, my mother's family, came from the Santee River Delta, which is the blackest area of America. And where my grandparents lived, we were outnumbered 50 and 60 to 1 by black people. And the evidence of what existed was so obvious to me that I could never accept the theory of racial equality. I knew on my grandfather had lost his rice plantation when the rice industry failed, and had stayed on as the gamekeeper for the Mellons, who had bought up the property and formed a private gun club. But he still had a small farmstead in the area, and I knew how we bred the stock. I knew the laws of heredity that seemed to govern all forms of life. And as I got older, and as I was taught in school the theory of racial equality, it was immediately preposterous to me to think that people, races in very different climactic areas of the world, had evolved over hundreds of thousands of years and arrived at the conclusion of that evolution at an equal point. The mathematical chances against that are tremendous. It's just automatically unlikely that that would take place. But what intrigued me even more as a layperson, without Dr. Levin's education in the field or even Jared Taylor's investigation in it, was that the liberals pride themselves, as most of you know, on being essentially agnostic or atheistic. They are secular. Even the Marxists especially want to tell us that they are scientific materialists. They drop God out of the picture, and that they're scientific. And liberals feel that they really have one up on rightists because they don't believe in God, and they're scientific, and they believe in evolution. Well, as you question these liberals, just as a layperson with no credentials, this is the intellectual, brilliant, liberal New York Times position. And it is that the laws of heredity govern every form of plant and animal life on the planet. You know, they'll agree with that. Except one. Out of all creation, one form of life has been exempted from the laws of heredity. And when you, that of course is Homo sapiens. They won't argue that a Great Dane is not faster than a Chihuahua. They won't argue that. But when it comes to the human race, they then say, well, in this group, in this one species, the laws have been suspended. Now, those of you who are theists, Father Tocelli, Rabbi, you at least, I as a doubter, can at least respect your integrity, because if you believe something like that, you could appeal to a higher source that perhaps would have exempted that life form from the laws of heredity. But these atheistic liberals can't appeal to any such higher source. This is their scientific, rational thinking. And as you question about Homo sapiens, the liberal will say, oh yes, well, we concede that the color of your hair is determined by heredity, your height is determined. They'll even concede now the tendency towards many mental illnesses, schizophrenia, are inherited. A tendency towards sickle cell anemia is even inherited. But the liberal scientific intellectual position is that there is one organ in this one organism that has been exempted from the laws of heredity by non-God. Now, I'm sorry, but I find that very unappealing as a layperson, and I have never found it possible from childhood to believe this. Maybe I was inoculated at an early age against liberalism. If so, I am very happy because I consider liberals to be, in a sense, I won't say what I was going to say about them, but I think they certainly are the architects of humans, of much human suffering, most human suffering, and will ultimately be the architects of the total ruin of this planet if they are not stopped. Years ago, when I got old enough to get a driver's license, I immediately got active in the conservative movement. I had been read along that line. My family on both sides were reasonably conservative, and we, as most Southerners were unhappy about what was happening in the 50s and what we saw as would be a ruinous social policy. And when I finally got a driver's license, I drove over to Emory University and attended my first right-wing meeting. It was a meeting of Young Americans for Freedom, which I promptly joined. And there began my disenchantment and disappointment with conservatives. But that's a little story that I'll come to later. I was quite active in a very small capacity with the Goldwater movement and worked in the state for Barry Goldwater. And experienced, as I'm sure the rabbi could tell you very eloquently, those of you who are young, have no memory of the incredible propaganda barrage that began in this country around 1962 and 63 against conservative Americans. We were blamed for the assassination of President Kennedy. In my high school, the afternoon that Kennedy was shot, I was challenged by several people who snarled, "You killed Kennedy," as if by some magic way I had levitated myself back from Dallas to Atlanta and had personally pulled the trigger. Kennedy had been killed, I think, very likely by a communist. His death was certainly beneficial to the left. If you solve a crime by determining who benefits from it and start from there, certainly the left and not the right benefited. But this began an onslaught against right-wingers of unprecedented proportion in the news media. One aspect of this was a line that was taken that we were mentally ill. And you had many, many people writing articles in Look and Life magazine and others explaining that we were desperately ill and needed perhaps to be confined to mental institutions because of our illness, sort of like what their friends in Russia, for whom most liberals have a secret admiration, the communists. Most liberals, I think, if you gave them sodium pentothal, they secretly fantasize about Lenin and Trotsky and the barricades in St. Petersburg. Now they fancy the communists. But anyway, they push this line. We are mentally ill. And I used to argue with liberals that it is an ultimate form of narrow-mindedness and bigotry to say to your opponent that you're not merely misinformed or making a logical error in your analysis of the facts, but you are mentally ill. This is a remarkable statement by liberals. And now, having said that, I must do the same thing. Because after a lifetime of dealing with liberals, including my brother, who is a very staunch